Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This is the Danny Parkin Show.
It is the Danny Parkin Show, originating right now from the great city of Chicago, coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans studio. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. We are talking about how to make sports better, how to make sports more fun, and we are relying on you to help us. 855-212-4CBS is the number, because I love when any industry tries to push the envelope and change things, find out what's next. Entertainment, movie, film, sport, politics, innovation, apps, it's great. Sports are not going to look the same 50 years from now, much less 5 or 10 years from now. So let's help push it forward, like the AAF is doing with football. They've eliminated kickoffs. They've eliminated extra points. They've put a replay official mic'd up in the booth as the eye of the sky. And then if you want to go for an onside kick, they give you the ball at the 35-yard line, give you 4th and 10. Say, if you get it, great, you get to keep going. If not, the other team gets the ball with great field position. 4th and 10 seems maybe a little easy to me. I'd push it back to 4th and 15, 4th and 20 for the NFL, but I like it. I think football is going to be done with the kickoff sooner rather than later. I think a 4-point play is something worth exploring in basketball, like the Big 3 is doing. I'd be in favor of putting that into the D-League and seeing, being able to actually study it and its effects on the game. Maybe 40 feet. You got 22 feet and in for 2-pointers. 23 feet and out are 3-pointers. So maybe you go 15 feet out from the 3-point line and say 38 feet and beyond is a 4-pointer. Ice Cube's the big three is doing it. I got no problem with that. And my guy Matthew Wilson tweets in at Danny Parkins. He says this for baseball, but I can expand this, and I'm going to do it in a second. He says, here are 5 ways to make baseball fun again. 1, allow bat flips. 2, let the players express themselves. 3, make replay quick, no more than a minute. 4, encourage buzzing batters. And 5, bye-bye unwritten rules. Well, here's the thing. You're not going to want to encourage buzzing batters. No one's trying to say with these rules that we should make games less safe. The players won't sign off on it. The leagues won't sign off of it. That's a liability concern. Now, in football, for example, have we gone maybe a little too far in the direction of protecting quarterbacks, given that now we know what these guys signed up for? I think you could make that argument, but this was a very profitable, very entertaining football season with record-setting amounts of points, and also the vast majority of the quarterbacks stayed healthy. So I think that even if they are a little bit too cautious there for, you know, my own personal enjoyment of football, it's not enough to get us to turn it off. You saw that big hit in the debut of the AAF. My God, dude's helmet went flying. It was like they were advertising for CTE. But, you know, unwritten rules are unwritten, so you're not going to be able to legislate all of them out of the games. Bat flips are allowed. Players just get there, you know what, in a bunch over the entire thing. Totally in agreement, though, with let players express themselves, which brings me to my biggest, not rule change necessarily, though it would be one, but not societal change. That's not the right way to put it either, but like, cultural change in sports. If I, Danny Parkins, was the czar of all things sport, here's what I would do. I would show that clip from the movie Stripes where Sergeant Hulka, the big toe, says, "Lighten up, Francis." And I would just make everybody understand that these are professional athletes playing a kid's game for the entertainment of the masses to make us forget about our problems for a little while. We don't have to pearl clutch. We don't have to all think of the children. They are not raising kids, though many of them are tremendous role models and examples and do amazing work in the communities in which they live and beyond. Not saying that. Not saying you should not aspire to greatness and sportsmanship and everything. But I would, if it was me, eliminate unsportsmanlike conduct, taunting. I do not believe it should be a penalty in pro sports. I think you should be allowed to hang on the rim in basketball. I believe you should be able to do the throat slash gesture or step over a dude when he's on the court. I think you should be able to do team celebrations and dance and spike and hide a cell phone in the goalpost. I don't believe that you, now, if you want to say that there is a line that can be crossed, like obviously no one is advocating for spitting in someone's face. No one is advocating for 3-minute long celebrations. There should be delay of game penalties. But I do not believe that taunting penalties should exist. Guys should be allowed to trash talk. It's fun. It's entertainment. It helps build rivalries. When Jalen Ramsey went through and named every quarterback in the NFL last year, that made Jaguars Bills interesting, a feat I had previously thought that was impossible. When Josh Allen played against Jalen Ramsey, that was interesting. And then when the Jaguars fell flat on their face this past year, they had everybody chirping at them, talking about, hey, what about now? Here's your comeuppance. It was great. We love it. We're such hypocrites on this, too. If there's a rivalry that exists and teams are trash-talking, like Auburn, Alabama, and the TP into the trees or something like that, you don't want destruction of property, but what College Game Day will show, you know, a student body bashing over a car that says it was an Alabama fans with a hammer to grow the thing. If there's a fight in a game and it leads to suspensions and ejections, it's a bad thing. You don't want fighting in sports. I get it. Neither do I. But then what do they do the next time those two teams play? They're like, bad blood brewing between these hated rivals. Yes, it led to suspensions, injury, punishment, and it was a black guy on the league, but they're playing again. Let's put it on their dramatic music and promote the next events coming up on Fox. Like, that's what we do. So let's stop pretending that we're all in the business of watching just soap operas. Sports are reality TV, period. That's what they are. It should be called reality TV, except reality TV is scripted. Sports are not. So there is machismo, there is testosterone, there is ego, there is trash talking. Just like if you're playing Madden with your boys and you beat them, at the end of the game, you say, good match, sir. Good day to you. It was embarrassing for you that you weren't able to hold me under 45 points, but, you know, I am the greatest. No. Muhammad Ali is celebrated. He wasn't at the time, but he is now. I am the greatest. That's awesome. And this idea of, oh, it'd be a terrible influence on the children. You know, listen, I'm not a parent, but I have talked to parents who are totally against this idea and some who are totally for it. I don't think it'd be the worst thing in the world if little Johnny was bat flipping in Little League. Now, you've got to teach little Johnny that you could be making the guys on the other team upset. They might not want to be friends with you. There might be consequences for your actions, but if you're willing to accept those consequences, little Johnny, then bat flip away. Or a parent who disagrees with that stance, who doesn't want little Johnny to have fun bat flipping in Little League, you could say this: hey, little Johnny, when your games are on television and you are paid to play, then you can bat flip like Javi Baez. Until then, drop the bat and go to first base. It's not hard. It's not a hard lesson to teach kids that, hey, you know what? Play the sports, watch the guys play the sports, learn how Javi Baez does the tag, but when you get to the big leagues, then you can bat flip. It's not a hard thing to teach your kids about. So I am a huge proponent of removing taunting from excessive celebrations. Nonsense. If it delays the game, fine. If it goes over the line into harm, physical contact, fine. You shouldn't be able to punch the opponent, obviously. Spit in the face, obviously. Kick the guy while he's down, obviously. Things like that. It's like the Larry Flint definition of pornography. I know what it is when I see it. We are way too stuck up and conservative in American sports. Watch European soccer. Watch the World Cup. Watch the World Baseball Classic. We could stand to benefit tremendously as an American sports culture if we just lightened up, Francis, and relaxed a little bit. All right, back to the phones. 855-212-4CBS. How are we making sports better? I want your ideas. in the great city of Chicago. Vince, you're on CBS Sports Radio. What up, man?
Yes, hi. You know, I actually had a few of them. I'll try to run them down pretty quickly. First of all, with the NFL, I would actually give teams two challenges per half. If you get the first challenge wrong, you do not lose your second challenge. You can still use it, and you can use your challenge on any call. So if it's the first quarter, first play, and there's some phantom holding call that the referee's called, and you as a coach want to challenge that, you can throw your challenge flag on it.
All right, hold on. I'm going to let you respond, but let me give you the devil's advocate for this, because that was a big talking point coming out of the NFC Championship game, where they were saying, all right, there was no flag on the field, and Sean Payton should have been able to throw a challenge flag and said, I'm not telling you to review the penalty that you just called. I'm telling you to re-officiate that play and see if you should call a penalty. In the last 2 minutes of a football game, everything is a booth review, right? Fumble, scoring play, spots, everything. It's all a booth review. If we allowed penalties to be reviewable, I think you're going to have coaches calling for the replay monitors at the end of games in football. They're going to just be throwing it deep. They're going to be doing back shoulder. There's contact on every play. And then they're going to say, okay, every play is reviewable. Go back and officiate that one off the replay. And you're illegal contact, hands, jostling. I think you're going to just see games ground to a halt if we open that Pandora's box. So I'm against it. How do you think it would impact the last 2 minutes of football games?
When it comes to that, I think that I would still leave that to the league in that regard. I don't know if there's a certain amount that they call or how they really determine which play is going to be an official booth review versus just, you know, they just play on and don't go back and review it. I don't know how egregious it would be. But I would still allow the coach, if he has a challenge left, he can throw that challenge even if it's within the last 2 minutes. So if you have a challenge flag to throw, and so in that very position from the Saints game, Sean Payton can throw the challenge flag and say, hey, I want to challenge the flag that there was a no call. I want to challenge that this was a pass.
So you're comfortable like with challenging something that didn't happen at all on the field. So like not overturning a pass interference call, but creating a pass interference call where there wasn't one.
I am comfortable with that, being that they only have a certain amount of challenges. So if they want to throw the flag in the third quarter on some play, they can do that.
Yeah.
And then if they want to do it again on some other play in the second half, they can do that. But once they run out of challenges, then there wouldn't be any kind of a challenge, and then that would just be left up to the official to, you know, review that kind of play. I'm not.
All right, what were your other ideas before I let you go? What were your other ideas?
The other one was more delay of game penalties in baseball, where a batter cannot leave the batter's box per at bat. They get maybe one time to leave the batter's box, and the pitcher can only come off the rubber one time per at bat. So if you're going to try and throw a guy out who's on the bases, you have to throw the ball. You cannot just step off. And then if you're a batter, you can't, in between each pitch, look down at the third base guy, fix your gloves, you know, readjust your bat, you know, readjust the stick on your bat and do all of that. You cannot do that. You cannot step out of the box. If you do, it could be a strike. It could be a delay of game. It could be whatever penalty we can come up with. But there should be way more delay of game penalties in baseball for sure.
Vince, I appreciate the call. I think the pitch clock is going to help with those problems. They're already doing it in the minors. It's already going well. I think a pitch clock is inevitable by 2021, 2022. I think next 4 years maximum, we're going to have a pitch clock in baseball. And I'm not in favor of doing the limitations on the batter, because I think what's happened in baseball recently that's hurt the game is almost they're a victim of their own success, and that the pitchers have gotten so good and the specialization of bullpen has gotten so good that every team has a few guys out of the pen that throws 100 miles an hour. And because of the launch angle fad and the upward swing, you're just seeing fewer balls put in play, and it's more of a three true outcome, right? It's strikeout, fly out, home run, because guys are focusing on hitting the ball in the air and for good reason. I don't know that baseball would be well served to do more things to disadvantage the batter. Hitting a baseball is already so damn hard. If a guy needs to step out of the box or tighten his gloves or look down at his third base coach, as long as he's doing it within the 20-second framework of a pitch clock, I'm totally comfortable with that. Because I just think that baseball is running into a problem now where the ball is being put in play at such a low rate, such a declining rate. Jason Stark wrote a piece that, like, the ball was put in play 10,000 fewer times this past season than just 10 seasons ago. That struck me as a staggering number. So I wouldn't do anything with baseball to hurt the offense or hurt the batter. In fact, I'd be looking to go the other way and figure out ways to – I know they're thinking about studying the height of the mound. They're talking about shift limitations, even though there's an argument that actually shifts lead to more walks, which leads to helping the offense. But I would look for more ways to actually incentivize – not incentivize, that's the wrong word – to tilt the power balance – a little bit more in the hitter's favor, if possible, as opposed to doing more things to limit it. Great suggestions still coming in. We're trying to make sports more fun and push sports into the future. It's the Danny Parkin Show, CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
This is the Danny Parkin Show.
Thank you for hanging out on the Danny Parkin Show. It is CBS Sports Radio, and our toll-free line is 855-212-4227, brought to you by Geico. Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on car insurance. We're talking about how to make sports more fun, how to make sports better. Sports have changed a lot in the last 50 years. They'll change a lot in the next 50 years. Baseball's proposing rule changes. The AAF is bringing new things to football, and there's some good ideas, but let's go. Let's be bold. Let's push the envelope. Let's shock me with something that hasn't been suggested before. What's your idea? I'm making you the commissioner of your favorite sport, and I'm giving you unilateral power to make it better. What are you doing? I'm eliminating taunting penalties in all sports. I think it's ridiculous that professional athletes are penalized for taunting. I was talking to Ryan Hickey, my producer. He makes a good point. College football is one of the most egregious offenders. If you celebrate before you get in the end zone on a run and you break away touchdown, they can take the touchdown off the board. Hook 'em horns, the upside down thing, turned into a penalty. I remember K-State in a, want to say, a pinstripe bowl. Guy scored a touchdown and saluted the military. Gave him a penalty for it. Complete and utter nonsense. Lighten up, Francis. Let's see what we got out there. Come up with some good ideas. Let's go to Charlie in Massachusetts. Charlie, you're on the Danny Parkin Show.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, man.
Good. So I just had an idea about soccer. I'm really kind of a basketball guy, but instead of doing the free kicks at the end of the game, what if they did corner kicks?
And, like, with all the players out there to try to convert on them?
Yeah, just like a typical corner kick.
Yeah,
and
I mean,
more people involved.
I actually don't hate that. Now, I am the most casual of casual soccer fans, so I don't know about the etiquette of it, but I always just thought it was silly that they stopped playing soccer to determine the end of games. But you're right, at least a corner kick, the chances of scoring a goal does go up on a corner kick because it's a set play, and it's at least part of the game. So you know what? I don't hate that. I like it. Good idea. Thanks, man. I don't hate that. Because to me, overtime does not need to be fair, but it should still be the game. Like, overtime is about determining a winner, crowning a winner of the game. So while I think college football's overtime is gimmicky, it's at least kind of football. Yeah, they've minimized defense and they've taken away special teams, but they're still playing football. So it's not how I would have overtime done. I like the NFL's way more than college, but it's at least football. Hockey, they take guys off the ice, but they're still playing hockey. Baseball, it can go forever. Someone earlier suggested a home run derby to end extra inning games. I don't like that. But if you put a guy on second base, test that out in the minors for a few years, see how it works, see what impact that has on the game, I'd have no problem with it. Soccer, they play a game for a long time. Can I swear? I'm not even sure. That probably would have been allowed to go. But they play a game for a long time. And then they stop playing soccer and they do penalty kicks, free kicks. It seems silly to me. Make overtime quicker to end the game, but it still make it some version of the game in which you're playing. Let's go to Miami and welcome Don to CBS Sports Radio. What's up, Don?
Hey, Danny, I got three and they're all pretty simple.
Okay.
Let me set the first one up. It's about the NFL and the end of the game. Okay, I'm down a score. I just kicked the ball to the other team. I'm still down a score, and I have no timeouts left. Okay, they get the ball, and all of a sudden they're in the victory formation. I can't stop the clock. I used all my timeouts.
Yep.
It's everybody walks away. It's over. You turn the TV off. No, I want to go to the end of the game. So anytime the ball is down behind the line of scrimmage, the clock stops.
Anytime the ball is down behind the line of scrimmage, the clock. So if the defense tackles a guy for a 2-yard loss or gets a sack, clock stops.
Clock stops, right, right.
Interesting.
So if you take a knee, the clock stops. So you can't do that. You're going to have a positive play.
That's interesting.
That's the first one. Now, the second two are much more easy and more dramatic.
Okay.
Baseball. Everybody likes scoring. There's not enough scoring in baseball. That's why basketball is successful all over the world. Start leaving the men on base that were in the last inning that you had to – that you lost them off base because there were three outs. You put them back on base. When there's people in scoring position, it's always much more exciting.
So, wait, what do you want to do?
You stranded runners at first and third.
Yeah.
And the inning's over. Next inning starts, you put your runners back on first and third.
Oh, God. Okay, that is drastic. That will never happen. That I can confidently say they'll be playing baseball 100 years from now, and that will not be a rule. But, okay, what's your last one? This is what I'm talking about. This is outside the box thinking. Your tackle behind the line of scrimmage to remove knees at the end of the games, that one is really interesting to me. I'm going to ponder that one some more. But, okay, give me your third one, Don.
Third one is get rid of the offsides in soccer. It's terrible.
Get rid of offsides in soccer. So if someone wants to cherry pick, okay, fine, go ahead.
Sure, because you can put a guy down there to play defense on him.
Yeah, right? And then that opens it up because it's less congested on the offensive side.
Right, more scoring.
Yeah. I am actually with you on that. I'd be interested. That's one, and thank you for the call, Don. That's one that I would like to see implemented at some sort of minor league level. How much would the scoring go up? How much would the strategy change? Would the defenders leave guys back? Would that lead to soccer games instead of being 2-1 or 3-2? Would it now be 13-12? Like, would it totally change the game? Or would it just lead to a little bit more scoring and it being more up and down? Same thing with hockey. I would like to see that done and studied, the consequences of removing offsides in those two sports at a lower minor league level where the consequences aren't the same. And by the way, and we'll get into it coming up with more of your suggestions to improve sports, that's what I think people are missing with the AAF. I'll tell you what matters about the AAF, and it has nothing to do with the rating that it got against one NBA game one night. So more of your suggestions on how to make sports better, why AAF is going to be key for football's growth going forward.
This is the Danny Parkin Show.
It is the Danny Parkin Show on CBS Sports Radio, and tomorrow at 7 Eastern, tune in to CBS Sports Network for college hoops action as the top two teams in the Patriot League battle it out on the hard court. It's defending conference champion Bucknell hosting Lehigh on the 24-hour home of CBS Sports. We're talking about how to make sports better, how to make sports more fun, and taking your calls at 855-212-4CBS because Major League Baseball is suggesting rule changes and the AAF is doing things different from the NFL, the Alliance of American Football that debuted this weekend. Got pretty good reviews that I saw on social media. It was my wife's birthday this weekend. We had friends in from out of town. I did not watch a second of it other than some of the highlights that I saw online. But I have done quite a bit of reading about the AAF over the last 10 days or so. And I thought that the Darren Revelle factoid that the debut of the AAF outrated the Saturday night ABC NBA game struck me as a good headline for the AAF, a slightly embarrassing headline for the NBA, even though they came out and disputed the ranking and how he had calculated it, basically saying that, in fact, it had been a tie and they didn't lose by a tenth of a point. Who cares? No fan actually cares about ratings, though network executives and commissioners do. But the key for the AAF is not whether or not it can beat the NFL on one Saturday night in February. They were the novelty. They were the new thing. It was on broadcast TV. It was on CBS. and the new thing did well, even with limited promotion. So that's impressive. The key will be sustainability. If they do it next Saturday, the Saturday after that, the Saturday after that, the Saturday after that, how do they compete against the NBA then? How does it compete against March Madness? How would it compete against college football rankings and or ratings and that sort of thing? But more interestingly to me is who's involved here. Bill Polian is one of the founders of this thing, as is Charlie Ebersol. The Ebersol family, of course, Dick Ebersol, NBC. They've got the Sunday Night Football package involved with Thursday Night Football. Been a league broadcast partner for a long, long time. There is a committee of former players that includes Troy Polamalu and Hines Ward that are involved in the AAF. Their games are on CBS and the NFL Network. Kurt Warner is an analyst for some of the AAF broadcasts. And you notice I said NFL Network, and I said Ebersol, who's got the ties to NBC, and the games are on CBS, another broadcast partner of the NFL. The NFL doesn't have a financial stake in the AAF, but they absolutely have a stake in its success. This is free publicity for football, and it's a feeder system for talent. So one rating doesn't matter, but the viability of it, I think, absolutely does for the NFL, and I'll tell you why. The NFL has an unofficial minor leagues in college football, right? That's the feeder system of talent. 99% of the talent that plays in the NFL has to play in college football. They have a free labor system. They've got a free feeder system of talent that is not protected by the NFL Players Association, so they're not protected by the union. There's no benefits that they get. They are not beholden to it, and they don't have to draft kids straight out of high school because the rule that says that you can't go into the pros until you've been removed from high school for 3 years, and there's no international alternative. I mean, sure, there's the Canadian Football League, but the marketability and the viability of it isn't good, and you're not going to get kids from who are 17 years old leaving home in Alabama or Florida or Ohio or Pennsylvania to go move to a new country when they can get a world-class education in an American place and they don't have to play against grown men and have the culture change at such a young age. Like, college football is a great business. It's a great product. It exploits the hell out of the kids. That's a story for a different day, at least for the purposes of this conversation. And it's great for the NFL because it's a feeder system of talent. But the trade-off of having a free labor workforce in which to pick 99% of your future workforce from is you can't have any influence on it because it's not yours. Well, the AAF isn't yours either. But when you've got NFL people shaping it and you're airing games on the NFL Network, you've got some sort of relationship with this league where it could be seen as a you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. For example, these are some of the rules that the AAF has been using that the NFL doesn't have. We've been talking about some of them. Extra point kicks are gone. Every touchdown is followed by a two-point conversion. Kickoffs are gone. Teams just start with the ball at the 25-yard line. Onside kicks replaced by the option to attempt a 4th and 10 at the team's own 35-yard line. The play clock, 30 seconds instead of 40 seconds. Also, no television timeouts. Less commercial time. Now, obviously, there's less commercial inventory sold, but still. A lot of things that, do any of those rule changes feel so radical to you that it would be ridiculous to consider that they would be in the NFL 5 years from now, 15 years from now? I certainly don't think so. But the NBA has the D-League where they can try out new rules. Major League Baseball has Minor League Baseball. The NHL has the AHL. The NFL doesn't have a place where it can workshop new rules. Advances in the game, advances in technology, low-stakes places where you can push the envelope on things. You can let quarterbacks get lit up for it not to be a penalty. Now, it's amoral, but they're signing up for it. They're getting $7,000 a game. It's a short schedule. It's a shot for Trent Richardson and Christian Hackenberg and Denard Robinson or whoever else is in the league to get another shot to keep the dream alive, to maybe get scouted to go back into the NFL just to play for the love of the game, whatever the case may be. They know what they're getting into. Even if it's not a direct partnership with the NFL, it's got fingerprints and tentacles of the NFL. It's in the AAF's interest to be on the good side of the NFL. Cross promotion, social media channels, access to their broadcast partners, being used on the NFL network, all sorts of things that they're already doing. And then the NFL gets the added benefit of, let's watch this game and see how it goes with no extra points. See if we like it. There's no consequences, no stakes, no real attention being paid to it. That's a tremendous advantage that the NFL has that they cannot have in college. That, to me, is what matters about the AAF. More football, great. More jobs, great. Happy for you if you care about it. If you're in San Antonio and become a huge fan of the Commanders, or in Orlando and become a huge fan of the Apollos, awesome. Good for you. Most of us in NFL markets are not going to, our fandom isn't going to be changed. Maybe we'll watch it if you don't care about the NFL or the NBA or the NHL or college basketball or any of the other sports that are going on right now. Cool. I'm not telling you whether or not you're going to enjoy it or not enjoy it. What I am saying is the NFL can benefit from it. It's not a coincidence who these broadcast partners are. It's not a mistake that these games end up on NFL Network. The NFL's never had something like this with any real viability or sustainability that they are even remotely connected to, where they can use it as a testing ground to see what's what. I think it's big for the NFL. I really do. And I think some of those rules are going to come into the NFL in the not-too-distant future. But let's hear what your ideas are to make sports better and more fun. 855-212-4CBS is the telephone number. In Nova Scotia, my man Matt on the Danny Parkin Show. What up, Matt?
How's it going, man?
Good.
How you doing?
I'm great. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, man. So I was thinking about the game of golf, right?
Okay.
So up in Canada here, we only, in Nova Scotia, we only get golf really 8 months of the year. The rest of the year is snow and can't really play anything. So.
Yep.
But to increase kind of interest, because I know it's a problem in other places in the States too, like where golf courses go out of business and beautiful courses don't get utilized because there's not as much interest in the game.
Yep.
Like, what if they increase the hole size in golf by half an inch in diameter? Just half an inch. Right?
Well, increase, so are you saying for the pros or for public courses?
I'm thinking across like the USGA, like RCGA, like every association agrees to it, half an inch extra on the hole, and you see more chip-ins, you see more hole outs on the fairway, you see more out of the bunker instead of being in trouble, you hole out for birdie. It'd be so much more exciting for the fans. Like, okay, the reason why I got this idea, and I've talked to other people about it too, was at one of the tournaments I played at. Like, I'm a 5-handicap golfer. I play a lot. And at one of the tournaments on the 18th hole, right next to where the clubhouse is, where, like, the people watch it, the people coming down on the 18th fairway.
Yeah.
They increased the hole by an inch. They made a bigger hole, and there was chip-ins for eagle. It was a par 5. And chip-ins for eagle, it was really exciting for the people watching. So I feel like if you did that across the whole board, not an inch, that's too much, but half an inch, maybe a quarter, and then the thing that
I would see as a problem with it is that we watch golf because it's hard, and the best of the best can still shoot a 10 under on plenty of courses. It's fairly rare that the best of the best feel like they are truly challenged. And so there's just such a huge gap between the amateur golfer who plays a 10 times a year and the pro golfer that it's not so hard that there aren't plenty of people that can be scratch golfers. And so I appreciate the call, Matt. So I think that that's unlikely to happen on the pro level, but I do think, and there are courses that are doing this, that have no dreams of ever hosting a U.S. amateur tournament or a PGA Tour event or an LPGA event. They're just public golf courses that you and I could go play. Widened fairways that are sloped down back into the fairway. So if the ball goes into the rough, there's a good chance that it bounces back in your direction. Slightly larger cup sizes. I'm all for that for recreational golf. If you were telling me that there were a bunch of courses out there that were making that, and it's like, okay, me and my buddies, a couple of my friends will shoot mid-high 70s, a couple of them are high 80s, the majority of us are 90s golfers, maybe 105. If I shoot a 105, but there's a course that I could go play where I'll shoot a 93 because the cup's a little bit wider, the fairways are a little bit wider, and I have a little bit more fun. That's not taken away from the sanctity of the game. So I absolutely think that there's a business model for public golf. Pro golf, I'd be surprised. But public golf, I absolutely think that that's a thing that could happen in golf. Let's see here. Let's go to Maryland and welcome Andrew to the Danny Parkin Show. Andrew, thanks for calling. What ideas do you have to make sports better?
Yeah, actually, what I have going is the modern-day ABA actually has a rule that I think is actually pretty exciting for basketball. It actually awards the defense for playing, doing their job. And if you get a steal in the backcourt, they automatically add a point for the next basket that the team makes.
So you want to incentivize baskets that come after defensive stops?
Yeah, they actually already do it. So obviously you get 3 points for any two-point field goal and 4 points for any three-point field goal once they get the steal in the backcourt.
When you say they already do it, where do they do it?
This is in the ABA. There's actually a minor league, which is the ABA, here in the States right now, and they actually already do this.
So, okay, and what is the effect of it? Do you think it leads to better defense, or why do you think it's a good idea?
Because, actually, it helps you once you get to the end of a game, or even if you just put it for, like, the last few minutes of a game, it helps you with your extra point there, so...
I see what you're saying. Yeah, listen.
Yeah, so you get the extra point on offense?
Yeah, I feel you. So baskets that would be worth more if they're the direct results of – I would need to see it play out. So you say it already exists in some level of basketball. I don't know about that. I'll have to do more research into it. I would think that there would be some ambiguity of, okay, so yeah, if you get a steal in the backcourt, sure, that's easy to determine. But if you get a block and there's a secondary fast break and then you score – is there a demarcation? Like you've got to score by the 16-second mark on the shot clock, or how do you determine if the basket came as a direct result from the defensive stop? We'll do a little bit more in terms of suggestions from you guys, and then we're going to try to figure out the top of the Eastern Conference in a post-trade deadline world and the best comp for Zion Williamson. Lots more to do. It's the Danny Parkin Show. Thanks for hanging out. This is CBS Sports Radio.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.